today. It's whatever day it is when you hear this podcast. This is Breaking Bits, episode Michael Jordan. I am Eric M. Hunter. With me, as always, is the two-time world champion, cup stacker, Tom Hall.
I stack the shit out of some cups, don't I?
You have. I've seen videos in slow motion. Very impressive. Let's get started with our quick question of the day. Tom, if you had the opportunity to go back in time and child Tom comes running up to you and says, "Future Tom, please tell me about the video gamings," what is a single word you would tell child you about the future of gaming?
Digital.
And what would your response be, do you think?
What, little me?
Yeah.
Jockey! Fuck me, that was bad. I'm trying to write and talk at the same time. Anyway.
What was that even?
I don't know. No. Anyway, it would have been. Golly gee, mister, what the hell does digital mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Because I'm 31 now, so like six-year-old me. Like,
oh, yeah, I would have no idea. Yeah.
I don't even think there's a CD yet, is there? Let me go back.
Compact
disc. It's 1989, if I'm six.
Compact disc came out, well, they became popular in like 93, 94.
Right, so I still can't afford them at this point.
Yeah.
My family's fucking piss poor.
Yeah, CD players were like $600.
Yeah, no,
shit like that.
So yeah, cassettes.
Right, big time.
I don't even think we had an NES yet. I don't think we got an NES until after the Super Nintendo was out.
Oh, really?
So I was still playing the Atari.
So you kind of went backwards? That's weird.
Well, because the NES became cheaper, so we could afford it.
Ah. Yeah, my family definitely took advantage of that Kmart layaway.
Yep.
Like, we'd start shopping in, like, the 1st of November and just put a bunch of shit on a list and just slowly start paying it off before Christmas came around.
It's such an interesting concept because you could just, you know, put that money aside and then just go buy the shit. Like, it's the same thing.
Yeah, basically. But I don't know. I guess the thought of like, oh, I got to go pay my layaway, like it gives you a destination and a thing to do.
I guess.
Rather than I'm just going to put this money in a shoebox under my mattress.
Stuff it in the walls.
Yeah. So but, with yeah. The wall chicken.
I mean, you should know that in the future, no one will buy games at a store anymore because you just download those shits and you do it in your underwear and you can do it drunk and you're going to buy way more games than you're ever going to play.
Yeah.
And they're just going to kind of sit around and, you know.
You know, I have made quite a few purchases while under the influence of alcohol.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you normally look at it and you're thinking to yourself, yeah, this looks like fun, but I don't know. I probably
I'll wait
have
for
a chance
to
play
sale
it
yeah. or something. Yeah,
but intoxicated you doesn't have those inhibitions.
That's right.
It's like I've got $10. Fuck it.
And then it's garbage.
Right.
I think my response to child me would be, meh. Which little me would be like, oh man.
Meh. I think I like your answer better.
Child me was an idiot. But child me did play video games. Tom, did you play any video games in the past, whenever, how long it's been since we...
A few weeks. I did. So, did I talk about Chariot on the last game, or last game, on the last episode?
Chariot?
Yeah.
On like the Chariots Xbox One? Fire?
Or... No, it was one of the free games for Games with Gold last month.
Huh. No, you did not.
Okay. Well, so Chariot is like it's a puzzler. It's a puzzle kind of game. And the story is you're pushing a chariot. Okay, the chariot is actually the coffin of a king with two, or I guess four, but it's a 2D game. So two big wheels that you can see. So the beginning of it, you push this king in his coffin to a tombstone, and the ghost of the king arises, and he's like, you're not burying me here, you have to find me something better than this, because apparently he's a dick.
Okay.
And for some reason, this leads you into all of these puzzles, where you have to get through these caves, with the chariot, and so you have to, like, you know, jump over stuff and attach a rope to the chariot and pull it up with you. Or there are some ramps that only you can walk up, and, you know, the chariot can't go up them, so it's on whatever below it, or you're carrying it with the rope, and vice versa. There's some stuff that only the chariot goes up, and so you're collecting treasure as you go through, and you're fighting off looters. There's, like, these little weird shadow creatures. And I'm still not sure why you're doing all this. Like, just go to the...
That's kind of what my question was going to be.
Burial, like, ground?
What's the end result of
all this? I don't know. It's part of the problem with the whole thing. So, it's pretty. The art is very well done. I mean, there's nothing glaringly wrong with it, gameplay-wise or anything like that. It's just boring. It's just so fucking boring. Like, there's never a point where it's like, I care. Like, how do I even know this was a good king? I mean, he's obviously a douchebag. So True. Maybe he was a dick. Like, maybe that was his whole rule. Maybe he shouldn't even be buried at all. Maybe we should just light him on fire. Like, why should I go through all this shit? And there's, like, some parts of the levels that can only be gotten to with a second player. So, you know, I don't have one. I guess there's online, but randoms, and who cares about those guys?
Right.
I don't know. And then there's like, at the end of every level, there's a shopkeeper that's a playful skeleton. And so you can buy shit for your chariot to enhance the ease of puzzling your way through.
See, I like the idea. Like, I think it's an intriguing idea for a game.
Mm-hmm.
To mix those kind of elements together, but I don't think the idea of pushing a dead guy around is the best way they could go about it. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Like, I think it would... I think the game would have a completely different sense if it was, like, just a... Like a shopkeeper kind of cart,
hot dog or vendor anything.
Kind of guy.
Give me a, you know. I tell you what, give me a wheelchair with somebody who can't walk.
Right, yeah. And you'd stack that wheelchair out with, like, missile launchers and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, so I'm not very far into it, but I'm going to go as far as I can on it. But I don't know. I mean, I'm reviewing it, so I'm trying to play through it as much as I can. It's just so fucking boring. It's boring. There's hardly any music, which I think is another big part of the problem. Like, occasionally you get, like, a faint bit of music that starts up in the background. But, like, a game like this needs ambient music. It needs it, and it doesn't have it.
Yeah.
So, meh.
It needs, like, a Tetris-style kind of, like, a beat to keep you going.
Yeah. Yeah. Or in, like, Bejeweled. Same story. Like, there's always music in the background, and it's always good and soothing. And it's just like, yeah, I'm playing a puzzle game. Okay. This one, it's just like I'm carrying around this asshole dead corpse, and I don't even have any music.
Yeah, that might be it then. Maybe it's the fact that you don't feel like you're playing a puzzle game.
Yeah.
You're just maybe pushing around a dead guy.
That's true, because it's like a puzzle platformer, really. But I just, yeah, I don't know. It needs more than it has. But it was free, so whatever.
I look forward to your review, Tom.
As should you all. As
dun,
should
dun,
you all.
Dun.
But I've also been playing Sunset Overdrive.
Ooh, tell me about Sunset Overdrive. Because it looks like Jet Grind Radio on steroids.
That's not terrible. Not a terrible description. It
oh,
is.
Sweet.
Essentially, it is Borderlands combined with, say, Mirror's Edge or Tony Hawk or Jet Grind Radio,
mm-hmm.
Combined with Grand Theft Auto. So
we have an open world where you're skating, grinding around with RPG elements?
Sort of.
No shit.
Shooting around, shooting fucking everything that moves that isn't you with ridiculous over-the-top weaponry.
Now, is it, like, silly weaponry, yes, like the dildo gun from, what game was that? had a dildo gun.
That's I don't remember, but I think I want to play it. yeah, like one of the guns is called the Dude, and it just shoots bowling balls. Nice. There's a hairspray bomb gun where it just shoots four cans of hairspray that explode on contact, and then the other three cans, when it hits something, they like shoot off in other directions and hit other shit. There's a teddy bear that explodes, and, like, you launch it. They call it the TN Teddy. let's see, what else is there? There's an acid sprinkler. It's like a doll of the mascot of, well, I'll get into that in a second, I guess. But it just sprinkles acid on everything. It's like sits there like a lawn sprinkler, and then you lure enemies through it, and they get covered in acid, and they die. So that's what happens when you get covered in acid. So
apparently,
the story is that there's a, in this town, there's a company that makes energy drinks, and they unleash their newest energy drink, but it wasn't fully tested and approved, and it turns out to cause some reaction in nervous systems, and it turned everyone who drank it into these hulking zombies.
That seems realistic.
And so the company has walled off the city, kind of like Resident Evil, like an Umbrella Corporation move almost. And they're going to try, they're also going to try to kill everyone in the city so they get rid of all the evidence that this happened.
Jeez.
Yeah. So you're part of this group of survivors, and you got to like find, you know, other groups and get people help, and, you know, so you can eventually try to defeat the corporation. It's fucking amazing. The characters in there are hilarious. Everything in here is just funny as hell to me. You find different kinds of groups of people, so like you find like almost like guilds, if you will. So like one of them's like the preppy kids, like their parents were rich, but they're also super smart, so they can make you like technological shit. You find a group of LARPers that were LARPing when this went down, and they got psychologically shocked, and so now they think they're LARPing in real life, like they think it's all real. So nice. They're still in the 16th century.
Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, and so like all kinds of shit like that. But it's just, it's so much fun. Like even if you're not playing through the game, you're just riding around on, you know, telephone wires, just killing shit that's below you, or and like the zombies aren't like your normal zombies where they're just like slowly moving in one direction. They're fast and they jump and they like they'll climb buildings to get you. And so like there's huge ones that like there's all kinds of different ones that have different abilities. So yeah, and then beyond that you also have the company has robots, like robot attack drones and shit. And so they're sending those out, and you have to take those out. And then there's also the group of, like, they call them scabs, but it's just another group of humans that are assholes and for some reason want to kill you instead of banding together. And so you got all this shit going on inside the walled city. And that's pretty much the long and short of the game. They did another really cool thing with it. There's an in-game TV show. It's not really a show, but every week the developer puts out a YouTube video or whatever. But they also put it in the game, so there's a bunch of places, like you go to like the TV shop, you know, and you stand in front of it and press Y, and then you watch the video that they put out.
Oh, okay, so it's kind of, it's the right way of doing kind of like in-game advertising.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all he does in there, well, so far, it's only been a couple weeks, but he'll like show off like fan art that they sent him, or he showed off some cosplay that people are already doing.
Wow.
Yeah, and then he'll tell you what the challenges are for the week. So on the Xbox One, besides achievements, the developer can also put in challenges, which he can change out from time to time. They usually, it's either just for the sake of doing it, or it'll give you some kind of in-game reward. And in this case, it gives you some in-game currency if you can do it, if you can get the challenge done. So, yeah, that's Sunset Overdrive. It's one of the few games that I would say is well worth the $60 I paid for it.
Those are very few and far between, man.
They very much are.
Yeah.
Like, I would say this is probably, to this point, my favorite game of this generation.
Wow.
Yeah. So, And they will, of course, they have a season pass available, so they're going to add more stuff to it eventually. But this is good. This was very well done. This is what I want out of a game. And it's also the kind of thing where this is the scenario where I'm okay with the season pass. Because the game they gave me for $60 is a full and complete game.
Right.
All they're selling me is an extra game. Not shit that should be in there already. Or not microtransaction-y bullshit.
No, that's good, man.
Yeah, Sunset Overdrive.
Does the title of the game reference anything in-game? Or?
Oh, it references pretty much everything.
Okay.
The name of the city is... Yeah, the name of the city is called Sunset City.
Okay.
And then the name of the drink is Overdrive.
Oh.
That causes well, the... Yeah.
Shit, there you go. Kind of totally makes sense now.
Yeah.
Good.
So that's me. That's what I've been playing.
That's you, Tom.
Is and that you? You, sir.
I picked up The Walking Dead, season 1 and 2, many moons ago, and had yet to have a chance to play it just because I've been too busy playing other games. So finally decided to sit down and actually play The Walking Dead, which is based off of the comic book series, not the TV show. So that's apparently a big distinction I've read online that, no, this is not the AMC show. No, this is the comic. And I'm like, gives a flying fuck. It's a story about zombies. Like, how is there really that much distinction needed? But it's interesting because another podcast that I listen to is called Idle Thumbs. And it's like four guys and a female game. They're all game developers for the most part, or journalists in one form or another. And two of the guys who are on the podcast made this game with Telltale.
No shit.
Yeah, so it was weird. So like, I'm playing the game, and I'm sure they had mentioned it on the podcast because I've been listening for like 2 years now, and maybe I just kind of forgot about it. So it's like, oh, written by Jake Rodkin. I was like, Jake Rodkin from Idle Thumbs, Jake Rodkin. And then the other guy popped up, and I was like, what the fuck is... So, and then I like started going back of like looking at their old show notes and stuff, and it's like, oh, Jake won't be here because he's working on a game. It's a top secret, can't talk about it. And I'm like, oh, well, he's probably working on Walking Dead. That's great. So Walking Dead, the game, based on the comic, revolves around a man named Lee. He is on his way out of Atlanta, Georgia, in a police car. We suspect that he killed his wife, but we're not sure yet. There's a little mystery there. The officer driving said police car is not paying attention, hits a zombie, crashes the car, dies, gets turned into a zombie, and is up to Lee to kill him, and you do so with a giant shotgun to the head. From there, with an injured leg, you start to journey about. You come across a small neighborhood and a home that is vacant, or so you think. You find a little girl named Clementine who has lost her parents. She decides to go with you because she needs apparently some sort of protection. She was found in a treehouse, which, I mean, zombies can't climb ladders, so I don't see what the problem was. I don't know why she just couldn't stay in the tree.
Well, there's no food in there.
You don't know that, Tom.
I do.
You don't know that.
I was there.
Oh. And basically from here, you and her set out to get away from everything. You meet people along the way, and there's a ton of shit that happens. You know, there's constant zombie attacks and stuff like that. The game plays like a point-and-click adventure for the most part, but it's more interactive, so... Grim Fandango, if you ever played that game.
I didn't.
It's a blast. You should play that game. They're actually doing an HD remake, so you might want to wait for that to come out.
Of course they are.
Well, yeah. So, but it's more like interactive with the character rather than click here. Oh, I can't go here. Like, there's lots of conversations and dialogue trees and stuff like that. And the beginning... Probably the first 45 minutes of the game I played a few years ago, and I was like super intrigued with it. And this time around, I was like, okay, I just want to play through this 45 minutes super quick so I can get back to where I was.
Mm.
And I realized that this game is super linear. Like, that, it says that the choices that you make in terms of how you respond to people or who you save if, and in the sense of an attack affects the game. It really doesn't. Like, it's in terms of the main storyline, like, it's set on a singular path. Like, you can't not pick up Clementine at the beginning of the game. Like, you cannot go with the two guys to one of the guys' dad's house and spend the night. Like, it's going to happen regardless. Right. Like, the game forces you. But you get choices in terms of how you respond to people and things like that. And I realize that if you're just a complete dick the whole time, the game goes really fast. Like, you speed through the game pretty quickly. And as I was trying to get back to that 45-minute mark, I realized I wasn't enjoying it.
Really?
And yeah, and the reason was is because I wasn't taking my time to talk with the characters and get to know them.
Yes.
And stuff like that. And, like, I suddenly got super involved because I realized that I only get out of this game what I put in, which is weird for a video game to me. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's things to do. There's quick time events. There's stuff where, like, zombies will attack you and you got to start slamming the button to, like, get them off of you. And then you got to quickly grab, point, look at the gun, grab it, put the shotgun shell in,
right.
You know, shoot them in. Like, I'm playing a game. There's shit going on here. But I don't know. It was weird because, like, I finally had to put it down because I was like, all right, I'm just overloaded on story. I got to stop for a second. And you get to a pharmacy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big group of people there, and they're all yelling at each other, trying to figure out. There's massive amounts of zombies outside. Somebody's like has heart palpitations, so you need like nitroglycerin or whatever. And Lee, the character that you control, was like, "Oh, we'll just grab the key behind the counter." And one of the characters was like, "How do you know that?" And he's like, "Well, I'm just making a good, you know, it's just a hypothesis." Guessing.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, well, yeah, it's a pharmacy. Usually they keep the keys behind the counter. And I'm like, how the fuck would I know that? How would Lee know that? This is a fucking... So there's like a game within the game because you still don't really know who Lee is and his past and everything that he knows. So like there's just like throughout the whole game, there's bits sprinkled like either like newspaper clippings or posters on the wall, and you go up and look at them and you can read them or whatever. And Lee will have like a kind of an odd reaction to things. And it's neat because not only are you learning the characters that you're playing around with and getting connected with those, because I mean, in this point, you're kind of becoming family with many of these people because you're with them for so long. You're learning about Lee as well, which is kind of weird because it's kind of like the self. Like Lee and the player are both learning about his past together. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And like, so when I finally like came to terms with that and like it kind of had that epiphany, like the game completely did a 180 on me. And I was like, I need to slow down. I need to be more meticulous of what I'm doing. I need to start making the right decisions, like shit like that. Like it became something completely different.
Right.
And just a matter of, like, 30 seconds when I was like, what the fuck am I doing? You know what I mean? So,
yep. So you've not finished it yet?
No, I have not finished it. I always get distracted by other things, typically games that are fast-paced. I'm still playing Quake Live.
Finish that shit.
You know what, Tom? I'm not going to do it now just because you want me to. I'm not your bitch.
Yeah, you are.
All right. Well, then I'll finish it.
Yes, Daddy.
Yes, Daddy.
Yeah, no, the ending of that. Make sure there's nobody around who you don't want to see you cry.
I'm sure I won't cry.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Oh, weird. But no, so I'm really into it. Like, this is always being a big fan of point-and-click games, choose your own adventure books. Like, this is that next step digitally for me that I've been looking for to kind of hit that spot in my heart of things like this that I haven't had in a long time. You know, like,
yes,
yeah. The writing is great. The voice acting is amazing. The visuals are really cool. I mean, I don't really care too much about the whole zombie thing. I've never really been that big into the whole zombie apocalypse idea.
I don't care either.
But if for their first kind of go round in a game like this, and it's this good, like, I'm dying for whatever next is coming out from these guys and Telltale.
Well, there's already a ton more.
Oh, for real?
Well, there's a second Walking Dead season.
Oh, I got that one. Yeah, I got that one.
And then there's The Wolf Among Us.
Is that what that is? Okay.
Yeah. It's the same same idea, but it looks like with werewolves.
That'll work.
So that already exists as well. And they're working on a Borderlands-style game, or in the Borderlands universe.
Oh, that'll be...
Yeah. Cool crossover idea, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, that's one of my favorite games of the entire last generation.
Yeah, I'm just... I mean, I was
kind
of...
And I hate point-and-click. Like, hate point-and-click so much.
Oh, they're so
but,
good.
I don't know, this wasn't... This ain't your mama's point-and-click.
Nah, it's kind of like your... It's just more of an
interaction. Because like you said, they mixed in... Yeah.
Yeah.
They mixed in game with it.
Yeah, which is... I mean, you know, that's good. You should always mix in game with it. But I was just... It was kind of weird because I was like... Just playing through the game and then... I kind of just stopped and put the controller down. And I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, there's... What's that? And then, like, just everything just like... all over my face, neck, and chest, and I was like, okay, I'm in.
It's good for your hair. Yeah.
It is. It's good for the skin. Yeah. It's good for the skin. So, yeah. And Quake Live. I've been playing Quake Live still. Never going to stop playing Quake Live.
How about now?
Oh, Quake Live is so good. Sorry. News? Tom? News?
Let's.
Want to do some news? So we're going to do something a little bit different this time around.
We are.
Because you may or may not have known Nintendo had a Nintendo Direct recently.
Really? And no, I hadn't heard.
I'm sure you have.
No.
And typically, when Nintendo has said Nintendo Direct breaking bits, usually gets taken over by the news segment with Nintendo jargon. And I'm okay with that. I like Nintendo. I'm a Nintendo fan. So, Tom, I propose that we do what I would like to call the Nintendo Minute.
And now it's time for the Nintendo Minute.
Are we really going to do it in a minute?
Oh, yeah, we're going to do it in a minute.
Really?
So here's how this is going to work. I'm going to give you a headline, one from Nintendo's Nintendo Direct.
Uh-huh.
You are going to give me a response in a handful of words.
Okay.
Shorter the better. I will give my response, and then we'll continue for the next headline.
All right.
Tom, are you ready for the Nintendo Minute?
So it's like the lightning round.
This is the lightning round for Nintendo.
I like it.
All right. We'll see how this works out. If it works out, Tom, we'll keep it.
Okay.
All right. Tom, here is your Nintendo Minute. Majora's Mask officially being released on the 3DS.
Yay! If they take half the care with this that they did with Ocarina of Time, we have another epic game on our hands.
I mean, I'm happy for those people who are happy about it, but I could care less. I'm just not a Majora's Mask fan, so.
Maybe you will be when you see it in glorious 3D.
And that's what I hope for. That's what I hope for. Duck Hunt Dog has been announced for the Super Smash Brothers for the Wii U.
Was that ever in doubt?
I
mean, fucking it was all the characters that are on the 3DS version are supposed to be in the Wii U version.
I mean, that's what I was under speculation, but apparently Nintendo never officially came out and said that, so whatever. He had a cool intro in the Nintendo Direct, so I'm all right with it. Mario Kart 8 DLC start including 8 new tracks. 2 of those tracks are being inspired by games Excitebike and The Legend of Zelda.
Yeah. Welcome to this century, Nintendo.
Right? Yeah. Like, it's... It's like it was like they were waiting for as long as they possibly could to see how other people do DLC, and they're like, oh, this is how it works. This is... Okay.
But how will that work on everyone's 56K modems?
Exactly. These downloads are too big. Now, I don't even own Mario Kart 8. I think I have to buy it now, like, because there's a lot of cool shit coming to it. So.
Well, just for Link's motorcycle alone.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You know what I think when I see that? I'm a cowboy on a steel horse I ride.
Jesus. All right, and finally, Duck Hunt for the NES is officially coming to the Nintendo Virtual Console.
Is it weird that this is the thing that really had me on the fence for buying the Wii U? Like, where I'm like, yes!
Well, see, the thing with me is it's like when the Wii came out, they were like, oh, yeah, you'll have this kind of Wiimote, and it works kind of like this. And I'm like, dude, light gun games, bringing them all out. And then we've, like, got none of them. And I'm like, right. Oh, well, that's a missed opportunity.
But, yeah, it's beyond time because, like you said, we've had this technology now for 10 years,
yeah.
8 years. So I don't know what took you this long. Because, like, they had House of the Dead and all of those kind of games on the Wii.
Yeah, but those aren't, like, old-school Nintendo games. Like, that's what I wanted.
No, but it's the same principle. It's even, it's a... You know, less done with the concept, so it should have been easier. But now we don't have to find the old, you know, tube TVs to play Duck Hunt.
Yeah.
You know, so if you can't get one, or in my case, you don't have room for one. Like, I'm in a tiny one-bedroom apartment. I don't have room for two TVs.
Right, exactly.
And now I can play this game again.
Yeah, especially if you have, like, a flat-screen TV next to a 21-inch tube TV. It's like...
Yeah.
What's going on here? So, this is one of these things is not like the other.
We'll see who's laughing now, dog.
There you go.
They should put it in there so that I can shoot that fucker.
Yeah, they're probably not going to do that.
I know. I can dream.
And Tom, that was your Nintendo Minute.
Huh, I like it.
Yeah, not too bad.
Yeah, no, it was good.
We also have some other news articles.
Who cares about that?
Well, all right. What about the buried Atari 2600 ET games? That they found out in New Mexico. They're on eBay now, and they're going for hundreds of dollars.
Yeah. I'm not a fan. I mean, I realized that was what was going to happen with these.
Yeah,
Microsoft spent bazillion dollars to, you know, dig those up.
Well, and they even took precautions. Like, every time they dug something up, they're like, look at all this crazy shit. Take some photos. Okay, now crush it with a giant Caterpillar tractor. Because, like, they didn't want people to take this stuff and sell it on eBay. That was the whole point. So they destroyed everything they unearthed. Or at least that was my understanding.
To me, all this is doing is going to drive up the price of other games.
Right. Yeah. As more people start getting into it.
It's a pain in the ass novelty that's going to fuck us all over that we're trying to actually collect. So I'm not a big fan.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of fit for the show, I think.
Just yeah, right.
Crazy bullshit on eBay. Which, if this is the first episode of Breaking Bits that you've heard, boy, do we have a treat for you.
Later, though.
I bought my ET cartridge for 99 cents, and I still feel like I got ripped off. There's no way.
I don't have one.
There's no way I'm going to spend hundreds of dollars for one that is crushed.
Right.
That somebody dug up from
thing?
The ground.
It's like... If somebody buried a bunch of Superman 64 cartridges, I'd be like, good. Fuck that game.
Yeah, that's exactly where they should be.
It wouldn't be like, go dig them up and sell them. I'll give you $300. Yeah. Oh,
it's weird.
Dumb.
Yeah, it's dumb. I still want to watch the documentary, though. I think that would be
interesting. Oh, yeah. That comes out this month, I think.
Oh, is it really? Wow.
Yeah. This month or next month. But before the end of the year, we'll have the doc.
Well, it would have to be either this month or next, because we're getting close to the end of the year there, Tom.
We sure are.
Sure are.
Yeah, it'll be next episode. We've been doing this for a year.
I know, right?
Isn't that crazy?
I still remember the old tweet that you tweeted out, Tom, about wanting to do a podcast.
Yep. I was without podcast.
Yeah.
And I was getting the itch again.
I know that itch, and I was there to scratch it for you.
You were.
Yes, I was. Finally, we got a new Tony Hawk game coming to consoles and mobile in 2015.
Yeah, I don't care.
Which, exactly, that's the first thing. I was like, why? Why is this still a thing? Like, Tony Hawk, great game. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2, better game, some might say. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3, all right, we're starting to go down a little bit.
We're beating a dead horse.
And it's like when you start releasing new iterations of a series every 6 months, you know, there's something probably not the best way to do things. And then I thought it was done, and now apparently it's not.
It's so back.
Activision is taking control now.
Those games for me were always a rental at best.
Yeah.
I just... You know, because it's like the novelty wears off quickly. And now I've got a bunch of games that incorporate this kind of shit into their actual gameplay.
Right.
Like Sunset Overdrive, for example.
And do it much, much better.
Yeah. Grinding is a huge part of Sunset Overdrive. And that was one of the most fun things to do in Tony Hawk, except I had to keep moving the stick back and forth to keep my balance.
Right.
No such thing in Sunset Overdrive. But I mean, like, that notwithstanding, I don't know if anybody's going to give a shit. I mean, there'll be some nostalgia people who loved those games. And like, yeah, I want to see it on the next gen. And, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe people really get into it. But, yeah, man, I just don't care. Like, I'm not interested at all.
Yeah, like, Tony Hawk games kind of remind me of Pogs. You remember Pogs?
Oh, do I?
Yeah. Like, it's something when you think back, you have, like, super nostalgic feels for. But then when you actually go back and try to play it, it's just garbage.
Yeah.
And, like, that's how I feel about these Tony Hawk games. Like, I have a huge nostalgic for these games. At least the first two in the series. Because, like, I would go over a friend's house and we'd play that shit for hours on end. Like, we just fucking loved it. We thought it was great. Like, we weren't skaters, obviously. Right. We really didn't even know who Tony Hawk was, really. It was just a really fun, fast-paced game where you got to collect some shit and do some wicked tricks that were super easy to pull off.
You know, wicked.
Make you feel like you were Superman there for a second on a piece of wood with some wheels on it. But, yeah, I mean, that lasted for maybe a month. And then it's collected dust ever since. Like, I think I popped it in once within the past 3 years just to see if the game even worked anymore because, like, it got scratched in a move or something.
Right.
And I popped it in. I was like, oh, good, it still works. And then I'm playing it, and I'm like, oh, yeah, good.
It still works. Yeah. Awesome. Lucky me.
Yeah. Yeah, right? Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, Activision's not a developer to sneeze at, you know, and if they feel like Tony Hawk is still relative, then, you know, props to Tony Hawk, but I just don't. I think this is going to have a quiet release, and it's just going to, there'll be a few reviews up, and it'll just fade out into the wind, so.
Yup.
Yeah. All right, Tom, break?
Yeah. Yes, please.
Let's take a break.
Welcome back to Mushroom Kingdom's Top 40. I'm Pacey Pacem. Our next listener goes by the name L and sent this into our studio. Dear Pacey Pacem, my entire life I've been stuck behind my older brother's shadow. Even though we are both twins and I'm taller and can jump higher, he's always taken center stage. Not just with our parents, but with everyone in the kingdom. It wasn't long until he found the love of his life. We'll call her Princess P. After he helped save her, they would do everything together, including tennis, golf, ride go-karts, even went to the Olympics. And I've always felt he was jealous of our friendship. Anytime I would win, he would come out of nowhere and try to make me look like a fool in front of Princess P. Well, Pacey, I'm here to tell you that I do love this girl. And even though I have just inherited a big mansion, I want her to know that when I get back busting all of the ghosts, I want us to be together. Well, Al, that's a touching love story. One that I think can only be followed by this single from the 1980 that hit number 5 in the Mushroom Kingdom's Top 40. It's Air Supply.
I'm all out of love. I'm so lost without you. I know you were right, believing for so long. I'm all out of love. What am I without you? I can't be too late to say that I was so wrong.
And we're back. We're going to hop into our review for this episode. We played Jonathan Blow's Braid. Braid is a puzzle platformer drawn in a paintery style, where you can manipulate the flow of time in strange and unusual ways. From a house in the city, journey to a series of worlds and solve puzzles to rescue an abducted princess. In each world, you have a different power that to affect the way time behaves. It is time's strangeness that creates the puzzles. The time behaviors include the ability to rewind, objects that are immune to being rewound, time that is tied to space, parallel realities, time dilation, and perhaps more. Bray treats your time and attention as precious. There is no filler in this game. Every puzzle shows you something new and interesting about the game world. Which is kind of an odd introduction to find for your game on Steam. But, you know, whatever.
Well, it would be if it was anyone else's game. So, well, we start with first impressions here, usually.
We do, yes.
But in this case, my first impression came long before I ever played the game. See,
sounds like your first impression was much like mine.
Hey, here's the deal. Let's say I like cars. I don't know. I need a car. Gotta go get a car.
Okay.
So Ford's got this great car. Everybody seems to really like this car. They're saying it's one of their favorite cars of like last year. Except every time I look around, I see the president of Ford kind of, you know, shit-talking car buyers.
Yes.
I don't care how good your car is. Fuck you. And that's what Jonathan Blow does.
Oh, yeah. He's very vocal.
He has this open disdain for gamers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you know, keep that shit to yourself, if that's really how you feel, because you want our money. I don't understand. You know, it's not like an us versus you kind of war, where it's like, I'll show them, ha-ha, I'm going to let them know that I don't appreciate their ways and their faces.
Right.
It's like, you just make yourself look like a giant douchebag, and that's exactly what you are.
Yeah, he's come out on multiple occasions in public areas stating that he is not a game developer. He is an artist.
He is an asshole.
Yes, he does have some asshole. Yes. Yes, he is an asshole.
He's an asshole.
He made a pretty game, though. Made a very pretty game.
Well, he has to make a pretty game because he's an artist.
Right. Yeah, so my first... mine was a little different than yours. I was thinking you were going somewhere else with that. So, the first time I had even heard or seen Braid was actually from the documentary The Indie Game, which follows mainly just two developers, Phil Fish with his game Fez... And,
speaking of assholes.
Yeah, and Edmund Munden? How do you say his last name?
I don't know.
Team Meat, who made Super Meat Boy. And it's about their chronicling of getting their games out and about, for the most part. That was... And Jonathan Blow had a very small part in the game, or in the movie. McMillan. Edmund McMillan, that's his name. He had a very small part, but I found that his was one of the more interesting, even though it was kind of short. But he talks about how he even came up with the idea of Braid, and it happened to be just something very, what I would consider now to be super ancient, which is an email thread amongst multiple developers, just... talking together in a single email thread. Like, I was like, that's fucking... Again, you got a BBS server set up too, man? Like, you'd IRC chat that shit? Like, but it was interesting because they showed, like, the very first working prototype of what would soon become Braid, and it was just very... Everything was very static, and it was neat to see how it kind of got developed. But yeah, that game, Fez and Super Meat Boy, all three movies... or all three games that were featured in this movie, I had not played before watching. So that kind of catapulted me into getting more research for...
I still haven't played two of them.
Oh, the other two are pretty good, man. Fez, I think, is probably the best of the three. Although I really
Fez, I haven't played out of the same reason I hadn't played Braid until now.
Right. Just because, fuck them. I'm with you.
Yeah, I'm just like, I don't know. I think I... got them in a bundle or some shit.
Yeah, just sitting there.
Sit in my backlog forever.
Yeah.
Not like the backlog with Joe Walker, mind you.
No,
which is something I like to visit frequently.
Yes.
I'm talking about my backlog with dust and dirt, and everyone's like, please play me next. I'm like, fuck you. I'm going to play the games I like that I've played forever. You guys can stay there and rot.
No, I will not install you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the funny part. They are all installed.
Oh, really? God, I don't even install them anymore. Like, I'll buy them and I'm just like, I'll install them later. It's not like I don't have the hard drive space. I just don't want the icons on my desktop.
Oh, just don't put the icons on your desktop.
I like the icons on my desktop, Tom.
No, I just play everything right out of the Steam client.
Gross. Yeah. Don't do that. So, Braid.
Oh, yeah. Right, so, we're reviewing a game here.
Yeah. So, Braid, essentially, the hook, line, and sinker with Braid is the ability to rewind time. Now, this game mechanic has been used in the past. The one that comes to mind is Blink's Time Sweeper, I think is the name of the game.
Oh, I've heard of that. I've not played it.
Yeah, like it had the UI on the screen was essentially like a stop, pause, play buttons that you could click through. Prince of Persia, Sands of Time was another one that was pretty popular. But one of the things that I think I liked most, especially during the movie, the indie game, with Jonathan Blow, he had mentioned those titles and thought to himself, well, you can only rewind time for up to so many seconds. Why couldn't you do it for longer? And that's funny to me because typically that's how I think of things. Like if I come across a game mechanic that I kind of like, it's usually, well, let's just make it longer. Why don't they just make it bigger? Like that's always my first go-to. So
Full Auto was another game that did that.
Oh, yeah. Full Auto. Yeah. You are correct, sir. Now, what's interesting is with this time mechanic is you can literally rewind time for, I believe it's up to 30 minutes. So you can play in a single stage for 30 minutes and be able to rewind all of that gameplay back to the very beginning, which is crazy. You will never use that much, mind you, but the ability is there, which I think is fun. So
it is. And so, feelings about Jonathan Asshole aside,
I'm glad I picked this game now.
Well, no.
I mean, I know
reviewing
he's
the game.
I know he's a prick.
Not the developer.
I mean,
no, he's a prick. He is. Other, like, the largest pricks on the earth look at him and go, holy shit, what a prick.
This guy.
Anyway. Yeah, so at first it's kind of confusing. As to what's even going on. So every time, like you said in the beginning, you start in a house. It's just, you know, it's a 2D representation. It almost looks like an architect's plan of a house. And you come to a door in the house, and you go in, and that's how you get into a world. And then that actually takes you into some sort of purgatory.
Kind of,
yeah. Between that world and your world. And then you go by, like, these five or six books. And as you stand them next to them, they open and it, you know, the story appears in text. But the story in the text doesn't make any sense. And it's just like kind of reading the ramblings of a mental patient.
You mean Jonathan Blow?
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's, I can't tell if it's just poor grasp of the English language or if, like, we're trying to do that on purpose, where it's, that's making a statement in itself. So I don't know, but you go through these six books and they're in every world, but then you go through, there's another door on the other side of the books, and that's where you start the actual gameplay of the world. And sprinkled throughout the stages are puzzle pieces, and your goal is to try to collect all of the puzzle pieces in each level using this time mechanic. And it's very challenging. The puzzles themselves are very well put together. Like, there is one way to do this. It's up to you to figure it out.
Right.
You have to figure out what time affects and what it doesn't. So, like, you can, there are a lot of doors that are locked and you can go find a key. But you might say find the key and then there doesn't look like there's any way to get back up to where you were. You can grab the key and rewind, and you'll rewind with the key in your hand. And now you'll appear back up on top of the ledge, you know, no longer, you know, in this pit. Or you need, you know, one of the enemies to go get the key for you, and then you can kill him. So you have to move a platform over and then rewind time, and the platform stays put, and the enemy now doesn't fall to his death. He lands on the platform and walks over and gets the key, and then you kill him and you get the key. So it's just, it's all, it's really, I don't know, it's very...
abstract.
Yeah, but it's also very impressive to me.
Yeah, like it's, how it's, I feel...
well thought out the puzzles are.
Yeah, like I feel like this, the way that this game's designed, it could have gone one way or the other. Like, I don't think there was any middle ground when it comes to this. Like, it could either have been displayed beautifully like it is, or like dog shit. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Because you, to be able to play a game like this and to really understand what's going on, like, it's not something you just jump into. Like, it takes some time to sit down and figure it out and be like, what the fuck am I doing? You know?
Yeah.
And to be able to even create this from the beginning, like, that just blows my mind even more. You know, because I don't honestly think I could have sat down and been like, okay, here's how I want these puzzles to work with this time mechanic. You know what I mean? Like, right. He really deviled into what the possibilities could be. And I think he really took advantage of everything that you can with this. Like, I don't think there'd be any way to make a sequel for this game that would be any better than this game already is. Because, like, he took it to 100%. The possibility. And I mean, that could be true. That could not be true. I mean, he could have something completely different under his sleeve, or somebody who's much smarter than I could come up with something a whole lot more extravagant and abstract and beautiful. I just can't see it. I can't picture it in my mind. You know what I mean?
Right.
So,
yeah. But no, I totally agree. It's he did a phenomenal job.
Yeah.
A couple of cheese things here that, like, it just kind of, he was either going for humor or paying tribute or whatever, but to me, they took me out of this game. And one is the enemy that is the piranha plant, basically.
Yeah.
It comes out of a green pot.
Yeah.
And it is the piranha plant, but it's, like, slightly designed differently. And then when you get to the end of a world, this fucking dinosaur comes out and says, our princess is in another castle.
Yeah.
I'm like, that doesn't fit with anything else that's going on in this game.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of that. There's the level where you're essentially playing Donkey Kong. There's, like, a statue of a giant monkey with a cannon, and it's shooting out, like, these little guys that act as barrels. And yeah, there's quite a bit of the tip of the hat to the...
I didn't think it needed it. In fact, I think it needed to not have it.
I mean, I like things like that when it's subtle. This was not subtle. Like, this was... Like, yes, yeah. This game is inspired by the Mario Brothers. I get it.
Yeah, so is every platformer ever.
Yeah, well, if it's good, it's inspired by Mario Brothers, you know. Because if not, then you get games like Beetlejuice and... Ugh.
Gross.
But yeah, there's... Yeah. There's quite a bit of it, so.
Yeah, so, but, I mean, if you can swallow that down. I was not able, at this point yet, to actually get all of the puzzle pieces in any of the worlds. I've not been able to figure that all quite out yet. I've gotten a lot of the pieces, but not all of them.
How many worlds have you gone to?
Four.
Okay. Yeah, I can give you a tip on the first world, if that helps. There's
maybe.
Were you able to complete the first world?
Oh yeah.
With all the puzzle pieces?
No.
Okay. The reason why is because one of the pieces, you have to jump on a super tall platform and you can't figure out how to get up there. And what you have to do is, because there's the painting at the in that level, you can go in and rearrange the pieces. The table, that's part of the painting. You actually have to put those pieces at the very top and then exit out of the painting, and they become a platform for you to jump on. Yeah. I did it by accident when I was playing it through the first time, because I was like, I don't know how this works. I can't do puzzles. Fuck it. And then when I exited out of the painting, I realized that the little Goomba creature fell and landed on
the table.
Part of the table in the painting. And I was like, you've got to be shitting me. So, like, I
that's
took
good.
It. And, yeah, like, it was... And that's the first world. It's like, if you don't get that, then it's fucking... You know what I mean?
Right.
It's crazy.
That's what I mean. It's like, there's no hope to get all of these pieces
right.
without cheats. And who likes to do that, besides most of everyone?
I love cheat codes. I think cheat codes are great.
But, so yeah, I mean, we talked about he thinks he's an artist.
Yeah, so...
And he is. That's pretty.
I mean, yeah, this game is extremely beautiful. It does.
I wouldn't disagree with him saying he's an artist.
Right. It does feel like a painting. Like the visuals that you feel like you're in an interactive painting, which doing a little bit more research into the game just to prove that Jonathan Blow is even more an asshole. He actually commissioned Edmund McMillan, who is the graphical artist and programmer for Super Meat Boy, to do the visuals. After completing said visuals, Jonathan Blow said, no, these are not the style that I want, and hired somebody else to do.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was like, well, that's interesting. I mean, I understand that it's your game from start to finish, but this guy has a very unique graphical style that appeals to many people and has been proven to appeal to many people. And for you just to say... You know, let me flip you the bird.
God, he's such a dick.
There's the door. Yeah. Like it's, I just thought that was funny. Like I was like, oh, well, that's... all right, then. That's cool.
Such a dick.
The music... man, the music. The music is kind of an interesting mix of... Kind of that experimental classic... Classical, where like you feel like all the instruments are not playing together. Lots of piano, and the other thing I thought was really cool, even though it would make sense if you were like, "Oh, I'm going to make a game about rewinding time." You rewind the music as well, which I thought was a neat idea. Anytime that you reverse time, the music goes backwards, which I know is something small, but I thought it was a nice little aesthetic.
I like those little touches, though.
Yeah. Like, because it really puts polish on the game, you know.
Sure.
Kind of keeps you separated that, you know, you're not this character, you're on the outside looking in kind of thing, so.
Right. So, I don't know. I'm pretty much out of stuff to say.
I mean, it's a great game. It's, I had already played through this game once, so I was happy to go back and play it again. I found myself being frustrated a lot faster than my first time through because I had already completed the game 100%. So I was like, oh, I can remember how to do all this shit. And then I got to like world 3 or 4.
You were like, no, I can't.
And I'm like, I don't even remember how to do any of this. So like I'm frustrated because like I keep dying. Oh, that's another thing that we should probably mention. You don't have lives in this game.
Nope.
Anytime you get hit, it's a one-hit death. Or if you fall on spikes or get in fire. The game just pauses, and the only thing you can really do is just rewind time to start over,
yep.
Which I thought was kind of neat as well. Like, there's no continues, there's no lives, you just rewind the game.
You never win, you just do a little better each time.
Yeah. Yeah, there was multiple times where it's like, I'd get hit by an enemy, like, mid-jump, and I'm like, shit, so I'd rewind time, but I wouldn't rewind it enough, and I would just hit the same enemy again and die. Like, son of a bitch, like, how far back do I have to go?
Now you're all the way back at the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Is this far enough for you, Jonathan Blow?
Okay. Let's try this again. Yeah, I feel like he would be that guy that would put in to his game a way to spy on people playing the game just so he could judge them.
Probably.
Yeah. Like, oh, you died there? Really?
With a beret on.
With a beret.
Because he's an artist.
Yes, a black beret. No, I think this game is great.
Raspberry beret.
Like one that you can eat?
Yeah.
Huh. No, I think this game is great. It's beautiful. Everything about it is great. The story, although kind of broken in structure, is still kind of is compelling and leaves it up to you, the player to kind of figure out what's going on. But it's one of those games that I feel like you can only play maybe once a year because it kind of takes a toll on you.
I feel like it's one of those games that you only play through once. Because then it's old news to you. You know, like it's, yeah, I don't need to play through this again. Been there, done it, seen it. That one playthrough is going to be really fun, though.
Yeah. Yeah. And very so
frustrating. I recommend it.
Definitely.
Not sure what it's going for these days, but...
I think it's traditionally on Steam for $10, but goes on sale quite often. So yeah. Just slap
Even
it on
at
your...
$10, I'd say it's worth $10.
Yeah. Slap it on your wish list. And...
Yeah. The next time you feel like giving a total douchebag some money.
I think it's like an 80-20 split. So I think it's like 80 to Steam and 20% to him. So.
Really?
Yeah.
80%?
I think that's what it is. Yeah, it's 80-20.
My goodness, we have to get our own
game
distribution network.
I know, right?
Going on.
We'll do 50-50.
We're wasting our lives not doing this.
We have this new digital storefront for video games. What's it called? Peem.
Yeah.
It's called Peem.
It's called Vapor.
Exactly. It's called Wisps of Smoke. Oh man, did you download that game on Wisps of Smoke? Yeah. That's a terrible name. We should think of something better. Anyway, play Braid. Tom and I approve.
Do it.
And Tom, now it's your turn to pick what the next game that we and you, dear listeners, can play along with. Tom, what is that game?
I have a game that I located in both of our libraries with 0.0 minutes.
Okay.
It is called Super Hexagon.
Yeah. Do you know who made Super Hexagon?
It wasn't Jonathan Blow, was it?
No, it's Terry Cavanaugh. This will be the third game of his that we've played on this show.
Good. Good for him.
Good for him. And now, dear listener, it is time for probably my favorite segment of the show. It came from eBay. It came from eBay is the section of the show where Tom and I dastardly go over the auctions on eBay, Craigslist, and other places that sell shit. Find the most outrageous ones involving video games. We discuss them. We link them in the show notes. We laugh. We cry. And we move on. So, Tom, since I am the odd episode gent, I will get us started with the Neurotris SX 3800 Facial Rejuvenation Microcurrent System.
What the actual fuck?
So this popped up somehow, retailing for $7,995. It is a grayish looking box with some silver knobs, a power cord. Let me just read the description. All right. So, detailed item info. Brain Age is a game of mathematical equations, logic puzzle. Wait a second. What is this? Let's get down to the new nitty-gritty. New with warranty and shipped in a manufacturer's box. The box has been opened solely to photograph the device. Check contents. Nothing has been removed. The SX3800 features level 1 facial sculpting microcurrent system, 7 preset programs for maximum benefits, an ion tropsis.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Product penetration?
Giggity.
Constant waveform morphology. Monitor skin impedance. Quad core output generators. The all new SX3800 features platinum nano, second generation microcurrent technology. The outlet power plant. I don't even know what the fuck this is, to be honest, except for the fact that there is not a training or certification included, which is upsetting. But yet, right above it is Brain Age. Train your brain in minutes of a day for the DS.
Yeah. What am I even? How did this happen?
I don't. I don't.
I mean, first of all, what? Who wants a facial rejuvenation microcurrent system for $8,000?
Because that's like even sounds not, like they're shocking your face with electric.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah.
Additionally, why did you describe it as a DS game?
Yeah. Right?
They were like, you know who needs facial rejuvenation? People who play portable games.
Right, because they get the sour face every time they're getting their ass kicked on Smash Brothers. Yeah, like, makes sense.
You know what? They need some product penetration, giggity.
Yeah. the other kind of shady thing about this is at the very end, it says, money wire or cashier's check, please.
Which is why it's still here. Please bring cash to man in trench coat.
His name is Hank. He will take you to your destination. Here's what your SX3800 includes. The SX3800S/N1246X380. Pico probes.
Okay.
Standard single probe. Large silver gloves. Large silver gloves. An AC cord. 8 ounces ion spray. 100 large poly inserts.
Giggity.
Gray glove snap clamps. Cables. Snap cables. Clamps. 8 ounces stem cell conductive gel. And the SX3800 owner's manual.
Stem cell? Is this even legal in this country?
I don't know what this is.
Should we report this?
It's coming from Dallas, Texas. So, I mean, everything's bigger in Dallas.
Why are you listed in video games and consoles?
I don't.
You are neither.
Or is it both?
No, it's neither.
You're right. No, you're right.
Neither.
So yeah, that's that's what I got going.
All right. Well, I've got at least a video game.
Good.
Sort of. I have Atari 2600 Commavid Video Life. Original, brand new, extremely rare. Holy grail. You fuck. $7,000.
Jesus.
Coming from Harwood Heights, Illinois.
I think that's just Illinois.
Illinois. Bring the Illinois. Bring the illa funk. Atari 2600 Video Life. Brand new. This is the one you've been waiting for.
I didn't know I was.
Is it? Well, now you know.
Oh, good, good.
This is one of the rarest games ever made for the Atari 2600. In fact, it probably is the rarest game made from a company that released more than just one title. That's very specific.
Yeah.
Here's the story. Yeah. Story. Breaking Bits presents Storytime with Tom Hall. Commavid was formed by three doctors who were working as atomic engineers at Fermilab in Aurora, Illinois. Trivia. What's Aurora, Illinois good for? Why is that significant?
It's a Wayne's World?
Wayne's World.
Okay.
High five, you win.
Yay!
They watched the popularity of the video game industry in the late 70s and early 80s and saw an opportunity to make some extra money on the side. Because you know how those doctors are always like, gosh, we don't have enough money.
Well, not only doctors, atomic engineers.
Yeah, like we are strapped for cash.
Let's get this side business going. It's either that or making meth. What do you guys want to do? Video games or meth?
Extra money on the side that could possibly turn into something much more. They got together and reverse engineered the Atari 2600 and started programming their own games. Everything was done on an old TRS-80 color computer, which wasn't a very popular computer at the time. Poor guy. He had to eat lunch by himself. Didn't have any friends. Oh. Because of this, they had to design and hand-build much of the hardware used in reverse-engineering the system and programming new games. The first quote-unquote game they released, that's their quote-unquote, not my quote-unquote,
right,
was called the Magicard, which was sort of a product of their reverse-engineering process. The Magicard could be used by Atari 2600 owners to essentially program their own games, though quite tediously. The Magicard even came with plans to build an interface that would allow programmers to store their work on the Magicard to a cassette tape. The Magicard saw very limited distribution as it was only advertised in computer and trade magazines at the time.
Where else would you advertise?
I don't know. In my pants.
Whoa.
Video life followed Magikarp. It was based on the cellular automation known as Conway's Game of Life. At this point, I have no idea what the fuck we're saying, but...
Yeah, it's just words.
Gonna keep going anyway. It's really much more of a quote-unquote programmer's doodle than it is a game. So you've counteracted the part where you say it's one of the rarest games ever made. Right. Just pointing that out. It wasn't seen as much of a viable consumer product, so it was only offered by mail to owners of the Magikarp. Which is strangely a lot like Magikarp, the most useless of the Pokemon. It was never advertised and certainly never sold in any stores. Nobody knows for sure how many Video Life cartridges are out there, but one of the company's founders is quoted as having said there were fewer than 20 ever sold. Today's estimates, basically in line with that quote, though probably less than half of that number are boxed cartridges. Most of the boxes have either been damaged, lost, or destroyed over the years. Kamavid would continue to release another 6 titles with 2 more in the works as the industry crashed in 1984. Darn, they had to go back to being doctor, engineer, billionaire, space cowboy, astronaut, scientist. This particular auction consists of a brand new copy of Video Life. Several years back, I met with the former owners of the company and bought the remaining bits of pieces of development, hardware, and software. Most of it had been tossed over the years, but a few games remained, and among them was this copy of Video Life. It had been stored in a Kamavid shipping box with 4 other games since 1982 and untouched until I removed it from the box. Why the fuck would you have removed it from the box? This game is 100% complete, even down to the sales brochure. The box is absolutely perfect. It's crisp, smooth, goes down easy. It's crisp, smooth, has no dings or dents or even pressure marks from other random items pressing up against the box. Giggity. The manual is brand new and has never been folded open before. The brochure...
That's such an odd way of saying it's never been read. Folded open.
Folded open. The brochure, which is pretty rare itself, was never unfolded until I did it myself. Again, why? Interestingly, one of the unreleased as yet and as yet undiscovered Kamavid titles, Mission Omega, is depicted in the brochure. The cartridge is as mint as they come and very breath refreshing. The label is absolutely perfect, and even the plastic shell itself can be examined very closely to show that not even so much as a scratch can be found on the plastic. In addition, if you look carefully into the open end, giggity, of the cartridge, even the edge connector of the circuit board is perfect. Most any Atari cartridge you look at has marks on the edge connector from being plugged into an Atari console. This cartridge does not. It's brand new! While I'm not the least bit concerned about it, I will plug it in and test the game at the winning bidder's direction, if he or she would like me to make sure it works.
What?
Kamavid
Games... So he doesn't even know if the game works?
No. Kamavid Games never came with shrink wrap on them, so even the best of the best have some sort of shelfware or the like on them. Not this one! You're not going to find a better looking copy of this game ever. Period. This is the one to add to a serious hardcore collection. The type of collection that you will hand down to your grandkids that will probably put them through college one day. Smiley face. This is also the one you will be kicking yourself in the ass over 20 years from now when it's worth 3 times what I've listed it for. I'm quite certain I will be. All of the pictures shown here are of the actual auction item. I will ship this game within 3 days of receiving payment. International bidders are certainly welcome on this item, but I will only ship through eBay's global shipping program. Domestic shipping will be done, blah, blah, blah. I mean, who would actually even want this when you yourself said it wasn't really a game?
Well, that's the other issue, is what is this? What is it? What is it? Like, what kind of game is it?
I don't know.
That's what I want to know. What kind of game is it?
Nobody knows anything about this game. Well, it's just, oh, good. You mean for $7,000 I can get a hold of this thing that 3 dudes did in their garage and no one's ever heard of ever?
And never will.
Because they're nuclear astrophysicists or whatever the fuck?
Man.
crazy.
It was like, who cares? Really? Who gives a shit? I'm sure if you go around looking through the annals of history, you'll find a bunch of games that only had like 10 copies made because the guy in the garage couldn't get it off the ground.
Right.
What makes that one special? Who gives a shit?
I want to say that this guy is probably a bigger piece of shit than Jonathan Blow.
The guy selling this?
Yes.
Oh.
Here's why. He has a brand new factory sealed Shaq Fu for the Super NES. He's selling it for $50. Fuck this guy. Or girl.
Fuck this guy or girl in particular.
Yeah, I don't know what this is, man. I just don't know. I have no idea what this is. Like, I just, I'd like some, maybe some gameplay footage. Like, oh, if you want under the winner's direction, I will put this game in. It's an Atari 2600 game, which probably means it's dog shit.
How about under my direction, you plug it into your ass?
And then pay me $7,000.
Dick.
$6 expedited shipping, asshole. Well, hey, Tom.
What's our next piece of shit?
What about a lot of 180 Microsoft Xbox original consoles used as is untested?
I'd rather not.
How about a lot of 180 Microsoft Xbox original consoles, console only, as is, untested, sales final, overall good cosmetic condition, pictures of actual items, 180 Xbox from this larger group will be randomly selected to ship. Shipping, due to the size and weight of the shipment, will be blah, 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 blah. Who is going to fucking want 180 original Xbox consoles with no hookups, no controllers, no games, no nothing?
Wait, 180 isn't all of the ones in this picture?
No.
Why would he break them into 180s?
Why not?
What a weird fucking number.
I mean, I mean, there's 180.
How did he get so many Xbox consoles?
So there's multiple questions that could be asked. One, $3,600 for consoles, 180 of them, original Xbox consoles. No hookups, no controllers, no games. Untested, may not even work. Now, one of the neat things about the original Xbox was the fact that it was basically a computer. Had an actual working, spinning hard drive, everything.
Yeah.
Which means you could hack the shit out of it and turn it into like a home theater system. Play, ROMs, all kinds of stuff on it. It's a nice little piece of hardware to hack with. Not with 180 of them. Like, I will not be able to turn these around to make a profit.
$300 shipping.
Yes.
It's in Canada. Because an Xbox console is like 7 pounds.
Easy. Easily 7 pounds.
Possibly 10.
So if you and multiply you have to that
ship
by 180
of them. And you basically have to send them on a pallet.
It's either going to send it on a pallet or he's going to send you one at a time. So you're going to get 180 boxes with 180...
No, you get one Xbox a week for 180 weeks.
Oh, my gosh. That would be...
Yeah, that's like, even if I was a reseller...
I was going to say, let's do the math.
Let's do some meth.
Let's do some meth. Math.
I am in Florida.
Nice. So we've got 180 Xboxes. $3,600.
Let's say $3,900 because they'd have to be shipped.
Okay, good. Yes, I like where this is going.
Divided by 180 is $21.66 per console.
It's not bad.
Let's say I sell them for $30, right? So I'm going to make $8.33 times 180. So I'm going to make $1,500 basically on this deal. Eventually, maybe. But I'm not going to be able to sell them for $30 a piece because they don't have controllers. They don't have any sort of hookups. They don't have AC cables. So I'm going to spend another $20 to $30 per console to make them whole.
Not only that, they are untested. So you could easily say that anywhere between 20 to 40 of these probably just aren't going to work.
Yeah. I mean, are people like, I don't know. It's, what's going through your mind when you post these things? Like, you can't possibly think someone's going to buy this. Do you? Like, I guess you do because you're posting it, but what's wrong with your brain?
Like, I have an original Xbox. I'm happy with just the one.
I don't need
180 of them.
Well, like, that's like the gambler's, you know, mindset. If one is good, 180 must be better.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's like, I don't even, maybe I can see turning these around, like, if you just mod them and then try to resell them. I don't, well, let's find out what a, let's do this. Let's, I'm trying, for some reason, I'm going to give this guy the benefit of the doubt that he is with all good intentions trying. Okay, so how much would a modded Xbox cost me? Let's find out. I can find just an original. These are all 360s. Come on. Just give me the original. I can't even find an original Xbox mod on eBay.
No, this I don't think they let you sell mods on eBay.
Oh, yeah. You can sell mods.
Can you?
No, maybe not.
I don't know.
Well, there's controller mods. But yeah, I don't know. It's hot garbage.
So. Good Lord.
That's all I got to say about that.
Speaking of hot garbage.
Close us out with some hot garbage.
Oh, God. This thing pisses me off.
Okay.
-. Halo 2, Master Chief 3-foot statue in good cond. No damage, original owner.
Okay. Good.
$5,000.
Holy shit.
$250 economy shipping. Its condition is described as a few tiny spots need touch-up paint. And what this is a shitty Master Chief statue. It looks like it's made of plastic.
Yeah.
And it has a Halo 2 logo on it, like the box art.
Yes, it does.
On the base of the statue. And that's it. There's no description.
Wow.
And there's two pictures of this piece of shit. And he's not using the right guns.
Right.
He's got two incorrect guns. And he's holding two guns for some reason.
Well, you can dual wield in Halo 2. That was the big reveal.
Yeah, but he's not dual wielding these stupid things.
Right.
He doesn't look right. Like,
yeah,
his armor is really bad. It's not his armor.
Yeah.
If you look at the side view of his legs... like, he clearly has calf muscles.
That's weird.
Thus making it seem more like he's wearing pants than armor.
Right.
Like, the legs are defined. Like, there's defined muscles in his legs.
Yeah.
Which is wrong.
Right.
Chest is the same way. There's no... like, this doesn't look like... it's a cheap knockoff Master Chief.
Like, there's somebody just cut out the box art and slapped it on the front of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where this thing came from. It was like one of those stupid store displays.
Yeah, maybe, that's what it looks like.
Where, like, the base of it is, like, that very, very flimsy plastic. Like, the super thin, like, eighth of an inch, maybe, at best. And, like, it cracks if you put it down roughly.
Right.
Because the base is hollow.
Yeah, for $5,000. That's
$5,000. Hey, Peg's closet stuff. Fuck you. You do not deserve to sell Master Chief stuff.
It's impressive.
You don't deserve to sell anything.
I hate
terrible.
Those. I hate those things, man. It's too much.
Ugh.
Much too much. But what are you gonna
fuck
do?
Me.
Well, that is It Came From eBay.
It sure is.
Tom, let's hop into our listener emails.
I would love to.
Excellent.
Today's email is from no one.
By nobody.
Because everyone hates us.
Oh. Well, if you, dear listener, would like to email us, please do so at breakingbits@hotmail.com.
.com.
And that's hotmail, hotmail.com, not the other Hotmail. Just so you know.
That's a different site entirely.
That strangely also does email. It's a weird thing.
Does it really?
I have no idea. I'm just making shit up
there. Damn, I was trying to catch you.
What's your email address at Hotmail? All
right, well, Eric Hunter at Hotmail.com.
Let's get into some shout-outs then. Of course, as always, we want to thank Mr. Neojake MCC for the Breaking Bits intro and outro entitled Tronics. You can follow him on Twitter at NeojakeMCC. We always have a link for him to his Twitter and SoundCloud account with his other chiptunes ditties, I guess you could call them. On the show notes, all of the show notes are at imericm.com. Little link to the right says Breaking Bits Podcast for all of your Breaking Bits enjoyment. Tom, tell us where we can find you out and about.
You can find me on Twitter at Ocarina of Tom. You can find me contributing biweekly to OneMoreCastle.com. Speaking of One More Castle, I launched a little side project over there. So on our articles, you can leave comments and things like that. But a bunch of comments never actually make it to the site because they're spam.
Correct.
And they're fucking hilarious. And so I started a Tumblr where I am just putting up those spam comments without all of the links and stuff that they put in there. The harmful shit. Just the funny text.
Right.
So you can find that at onemorecastlespam.tumblr.com.
All right, I gotta check this
out. And some of that shit is pretty funny. Hunter's going there right now. You can also find me at my personal blog at thomas-hall.com and contributing to readretro.com and be contributing to the Retro Print Magazine, which is currently kickstarting its second year of existence. So be a link to that in the show notes.
Absolutely. Very cool. For me, you can find me on Twitter at Eric Hunter. Of course, you can find all of my indie game musings here at IamEricM.com. I also contribute to OneMoreCastle.com, both as the co-community manager with Mr. Tom Hall, and as the audio engineer for the podcast over there, where we talk about old video games.
The oldest.
The oldest of the old. One thing I wanted to make a note to let you, dear listeners, know, which I don't believe we've ever mentioned on here before. But if you use a podcasting service such as iTunes or Stitcher, we would absolutely be overjoyed if you could give us a rating. 5 stars is always the best, of course, but if you feel that that we are lacking as a show, please first go fuck yourself, and then give us 5 stars. I'm kidding. Rate us however you see fit, but the ratings actually do help when it comes for us to show up in certain avenues, so the more the better. And of course, you can always email us, breakingbits@hotmail.com. We will be playing what was it called?
Super Hexagon.
So if you have played the game or would like to play it with us, please leave us your thoughts. We will talk about them on the show.
I'm concerned because I never played Hexagon.
Yeah, so Super
Hexagon. I don't know if I'll miss the story.
I actually fucking yes.
It's a Hexagon humor. Actually, it's Super humor is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, the first game was just called Super. So this yes. is Super the Hexagon. But yes, if you'd like to participate in the show with us as I start to ramble, please do so. BreakingBits@hotmail.com. Other than that, Tom, I will have to bid you adieu.
Adieu. Adieu to you.
And adieu-doo to doo-doo.